On this episode, we ask full-stack JavaScript developer and founder of OKGrow, Paul Dowman, what are the biggest risks of starting your own business?
I guess I broke a bone once.
It was just a little bone. I got hit with a stick. Nothing serious.
Thunder! 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 Thunder!
I am Frederick Philip von Weiss, and you are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a design and developer discussion for all levels into industry that love what they do and do web good. On this episode, we have the pleasure of talking to a developer slash entrepreneur from the ever better looking option to the north, America's next door neighbor, Canada. We have full stack JavaScript developer and founder of OKGrow, Paul Dowman. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. We're so excited to talk to you. And when I say we, I guess I sound a little crazy because it's just me and you in this episode, so I don't mean the we as far as the sense that the queen uses it. I'll just briefly mention that JD had a scheduling issue with work and putting out some fires, and Eric actually had some issues where he had to go to the hospital and go to the ER during work. He had some surgery done, but he's doing a lot better. He actually had, and I don't know if we'll talk about this briefly. I don't want to put too much light on it, but, and it might sound like a joke, but he had what his family said is a undescending testicle. Not joking. Never heard of this before, but some people have it, and he had it, and they did something to where he had to get it removed. But he is doing okay, but he's still in the hospital.
Oh, well, I hope he's okay. That's good to hear that he's all right.
Yeah.
Man, surgery for any reason is a little bit scary.
Oh my God. Yeah. The last thing I had to have was, and this will go back to our martial arts discussion, which we're going to talk a little bit about. I had a double hernia. I was cross training in Okinawa Shoryu, Karate Do, and Jiu Jitsu. I was lifting somebody. They were doing like a bear hug behind me, and I went back and I was doing like the sweep, and I was lifting the guy. I did it the wrong way, and I ended up popping some stuff, and I had to have double hernia surgery.
Oh man,
that was just awful. Yeah, and I'm sure with you being in the martial arts, you probably had a few surgeries yourself.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've never hurt myself seriously. Bruise. Oh well, I guess I broke a bone once, but
yeah, I'd say breaking a
no
bone.
No surgery.
Yeah, okay. Well, no surgery.
It was just a little bone. It was just a bone in my hand. I got hit with a stick. Nothing serious.
Oh, okay. Well, that's healable quickly, but not surgery. Yeah, that stuff, no joke sometimes. So I guess to go into a little bit of context about you in the beginning, I read on your website that you're a practicing student of the martial arts, Filipino martial arts specifically. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I find it hard to say what it is because... Okay. I suppose if I were to say one thing, I would say JKD, which is Jeet Kune Do. Mm-hmm. But really, I just follow a teacher who is very, very open-minded, and he studies all kinds of things. So he knows everything from all kinds of grappling to Western boxing to Filipino martial arts and stick fighting. And lately, he's been very into silat, which is Indonesian martial arts. So, I mean, I think... So what Jeet Kune Do is Bruce Lee's, I mean, everybody knows Bruce Lee was an actor and, you know, was pretty awesome looking in the movies, but he was actually a really great athlete and martial artist. And he was very, very into studying, like he wrote books, and he really kind of broke down all the techniques and training and everything in a very, methodical way. But his style, he didn't really want people to just mimic his style, and the idea with Jeet Kune Do is that you just take whatever you can from everywhere and you use what works for you and you discard what doesn't. So if you're 250 pounds, you're going to probably fight differently than somebody who's small and fast, for example. And so, which I think is obviously a great way to do things. And so the people that followed him tended to bring in all kinds of other influences from everywhere. And my teacher came my teacher was heavily influenced by somebody who had studied a lot of Filipino martial arts, and I just found stick fighting to be really the most kind of fun and interesting thing that I've learned. So I kind of focus on that, but yeah, it's a little bit of everything. So I find it hard to say that I do one particular thing.
How long have you been doing that? I believe I read on your website 7 years.
Yeah, and I can't remember when I made that website, so I'm trying to do math in my head. it's about that, 7 or 8 years, maybe 8 years now. But I had some kids in there, and you know, I spent a little bit of time, like after my second child, I spent probably 2 years not doing very much of it, and I'm back to it pretty regularly now. So. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I mean, if you say you've been doing something for 7 years, you better be really good at it. And so maybe I should say I've been doing it for less than that. I have not done 10,000 hours or whatever it's supposed to take. I think I did some math and I was going to be about 70 before I'm actually good at this, based on the 10,000 hour thing.
It's not that you've been doing it for 7 years, 7 days a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a hobby. It's something fun to do. And, you know, I like to have other things to do outside of work and career.
Yeah, well, it's good to have something, whether it's running, lifting weights, or whatever. I think specifically martial arts is great because it really allows you to take your mind off of the work environment and place it somewhere else completely, to have that focus that levels the same way your work experience does, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the same kind of focus that you'd put into your work, you're going to need that as well in martial arts. It's not just about the exercise, but it's about, you know, learning the particular techniques, katas, or what have you.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. Of course, there's the exercise, as you mentioned. I mean, you know, being active is obviously important, but it's also, there's a couple things I particularly like about it. One is just, I think mastery of something is really where you truly get enjoyment in life. And so probably a lot of people listening to the show are feeling that with computer related things and creative pursuits, which is good. I think you should have that. And as a hobby, I think that's really important as well. So, you know, I think that there's that. And then the second thing that I like about it is just something where you face a little bit of fear, I think can be a good thing. So, you know, like fear to push yourself, fear to get hit with a stick or a punch or whatever. It's, you know, it's not a bad thing. And it's not for everybody, like, but I think that whatever you do, you should push yourself a little bit beyond your comfort zone.
Well, yeah, having that fear to not exist in mediocrity and take chances in life. We had a guest that we spoke to a few weeks ago, Kyle, and he was talking about how he was in the cable business and he was presented with an opportunity to become a developer. And he could have stayed in the cable industry and done very well for himself, but yet he faced it, he made a jump, is now a full-stack developer. You have to take some risks in life. And I think martial arts definitely teaches you that. It gives you confidence as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, and as long as you don't expect to win everything or succeed in everything, like that kind of takes some of that fear away as well.
Sure, I think failing is also a great way to succeed because it provides so many lessons.
Yep. Yep. Learning what not to do, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, getting the confidence that, but more importantly, just having the confidence that after you fail a bunch of times that, you know, life still goes on and you then succeed eventually. So I think when you're younger, another thing I liked about that interview with Kyle that you were just mentioning there was, you know, he was talking about, you know, his age and maturity in the industry and whatever. And mm-hmm. I think once you're, as you get older, you are also, you've had more chances to have succeeded. And I think sometimes when you're younger, you've maybe you're defined by like a few things that you've failed. I certainly failed more times than I succeeded in all of life, but I think just the numbers end up working out that eventually you succeed in enough things. Like that obvious quote from Thomas Edison, which I'll probably screw it up, but something about not having failed 10,000 times to build a light bulb or whatever it was, but having found 10,000 ways that it doesn't work.
Absolutely. You only fail if you stop trying.
Totally. Like chances are you're not going to just come up for everything. I mean, maybe some things, sometimes it'll happen. And maybe that'll reinforce your feeling that that's how it should be. But for most people, for most things, that a success doesn't just happen instantly without having failed a whole lot of times.
So speaking of that, how did you find OK Grow? What was the genesis of this company? How did you get to this? I know you didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to start a company and this is what we're going to do. I saw that you went to school, you had an ad agency, or you were a major part of this ad agency where you were championing a few different things.
It was certainly not my ad agency. It was when I was in school. So this is 1995, I think.
Okay.
95. And I was in second year university, and I was just playing around with web stuff, because the web was still pretty new at that time. Most people didn't even have internet connections, and there was an ad agency that had advertised a job for somebody. They knew this web thing was going to be big, and they were looking for somebody that could get them started. And so, luckily, I had actually published. I'd been playing around with web stuff, and I had put up something on the internet. I was lucky that I had access to that at the time. I think a lot of people even didn't. And so I had something to show, which is, I guess, a major lesson that we should come back to in a minute. But mm-hmm. I had something to show, and they were like, "Oh, this guy knows how to do this web thing," and so they hired me, and I set them up with actually helped them hook up an ISDN line to their office, which is like a really old. I think it was like 128 kilobit per second, but at that time it was super fast. The alternative was modems. And so basically I did a summer job after my second year university, and I got them started with their online the online department for their agency.
You must have been they the were hero already doing over there.
It was pretty fun. It was really cool. And I think it was, you know, being in the right place at the right time. You know, having just played around with the right things and just told them I could do it, and they believed me, and so I had to do it because I told them I could.
Yeah.
So we did it. Yeah, it was fun. And then after that, I did various web related things. I did a bit of traveling, worked for a web development company in Germany for a little while. I worked at Intuit Canada, which is not in California, but in Edmonton, Western Canada. And I was part of the team that built, it was a very small team, and we built the first version of what is now TurboTax Online, so the web version. You know, back then they had the desktop version of it, which was called QuickTax here in Canada. But anyway, they wanted, they had a pretty senior team of about five guys that were building the next generation version of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess they wanted somebody young, or for some reason there was just room for somebody that had a little, maybe they felt they didn't have experience with the web. I don't know. I was pretty young, and they hired me, and I was really, really lucky to be part of that. So we built that. And then I just went off and did a few startup things. Actually, I went traveling for a year, and then I took a year off work and sold all my stuff, went traveling. And then when I came back to start a company with a friend. And so we built an online, like a SaaS-based, it was for the HR space, kind of. And we failed. We didn't know how to build a company or sell stuff. And, you know, I was just a developer, or that's how I looked at myself. And I didn't really get into the business side of stuff, but I built a really awesome, I wrote some really, really great code that I was really proud of, which ended up being a totally, I won't say useless, because, yeah, I learned some stuff, but helped my career go forward, but we failed as a company. And so since then, I had always wanted to, I think maybe at that time, I didn't really necessarily want to start a company, but... Mm-hmm. Having failed at it, I was like, damn, I can't just leave that as a failure. Now I want to start a company and I want to succeed. So it took me a little while to sort of get back on my feet about that. I mean, it was a very expensive failure. We spent a year with no money. And which, you know, when you're young, it feels like it feels bad at the time, but who cares? Like, really, you'll recover from that. So I think it was, in retrospect, it was good. I worked for some other startups in order to try to stay in that industry and wait for my chance. I worked for a company that ended up being acquired. Nothing spectacular, but you know, it was I guess a good success. And then I was just freelancing, and I wanted to. So I am answering your question of how OkGrow started in a long roundabout way.
Oh no, go on, please.
And so I ended up. I didn't want to stay working for the big company that acquired us, and I was just freelancing for a while, and I wanted to do bigger things. So it just sort of came about out of that. And I realized, you know, I want to start a company, but the domain, the subject that I understand is actually software development. So I think what I want to sell is software development. And so this kind of makes sense. So that's basically what I did. That's how OkGrow started.
From those accomplishments, maybe some failures, but you built upon that, and then you decided, I'm going to start this company, and you decided you wanted to start a software company. So what exactly do you do then at OkGrow? You are the owner, but you are also a developer. Yep. You wear a lot of different hats. You have a lot of different responsibilities. What does that look like on a day-to-day?
Yeah, I guess I do. I do a bit of everything. I probably do too much of the development, or you know, I probably am involved a little too much in development. So I'm actively trying not to do that anymore so much. Mm-hmm. It's actually my favorite thing to do, and it's, you know, I guess having done it for so long, I've got plenty of opinions on it. But I've hired a bunch of really good people that I trust to do that stuff. So I'm doing my best just to let them do it and do it right, and let myself focus on the sort of running the company things.
Delegating, but I know it's hard to let go when you have that control, and especially if that's something that you really enjoy doing.
Yeah, it is, but you have to do it. So, and I guess that's just, that's probably the thing that stops most small businesses from turning into, you know, a big business that scales is, you know, the founder being the one that does things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a famous book that anybody who's ever starting a company should read, which is The E-Myth. And that's pretty much the first thing I read when I decided to start a business about, it's about, you know, if you're a technical person of any sort, whether you're a chef or anything else, a chef that wants to start a restaurant, or, you know, a carpenter that wants to start a carpentry business, you have to work, you have to focus on working on the business, not in the business. So I think everybody that starts a business in the domain that they're an expert in probably struggles with that. Mm-hmm. But you have to do it. Yeah, working on the business as opposed to working in it. Mm-hmm. A related thing to that is something that I would recommend anybody to check out is there's, I think it's, I'm gonna have to check this and get back to you on the end of the show, but
yeah.
I think it's principles.org. So, or you can just Google Ray Dalio principles. And so Ray Dalio is the guy that founded Bridgewater Capital. So I think they're financial, they're, you know, investment type company. And that doesn't really matter what they do, but he wrote this really great thing called, principles, and it's all about, how his principles in starting and running his company. And one of the major points in there is about, and this is not just for running a company, this is for you and your life and anything you want to achieve, even in your career. The idea is that you are kind of building a machine. So you might be good at certain things, mm-hmm. but whatever you want to achieve, you're not going to do it all by yourself. So you look at the deficiencies that you have, and you have to be very brave about facing up to what those are and really admit it. And you find people that fill those gaps, and you let them do the things that they're good at. So if you're trying to achieve something, and you look at what you are less strong at, and or you know, even what you are really weak at, and you find people to help you with those things. And those people can be advisors in your career, and they can help you make the types of decisions that you should make, or they can help you actually, you know, if you can find people to actually delegate things to, great, that's even better. So that's the idea. So finding people to kind of help you and fill in the gaps that you don't that you lack yourself.
In turn, you're helping them.
Totally. There's got to be something in it for them. But a lot of people, people really like helping other people. I mean, I definitely like helping people. I think there's nobody that doesn't. So a lot of people are busy, and you have to make it worth their while. But it doesn't even have to be worth their while in some tangible way. Just the fact that they feel that they are doing something good for someone else is often enough.
It's the rewarding feeling of doing that. I think that's just one of our basic human needs, is to help people out. That goes along with probably the same things as like food, water, shelter, love, to also have a sense of purpose.
Yep,
and to help.
Totally.
One of the things I read about was sometimes it's not about finding people with a high-end position that has a paycheck with six figures. Sometimes it's about providing them with a job that they feel they have a purpose and they have a say in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of times in my career where I could have made all kinds of choices to go with a job that would pay higher. I never made those choices because at the end of the day, I mean, like every single day you have to live with it if you hate your job.
Yeah.
And if you don't get any sort of fulfillment from life. So,
yeah.
And, you know, also it's looking forward to the future, because often getting paid higher today doesn't necessarily mean it's the most lucrative long-term thing either, right? So
exactly. You might be stuck in a cubicle, and you're going to be stuck in that box for the next 20 to 25 years.
You could be. But, and you know what, if you are in that position, there's things you can do as well, right? So if you don't like your job, you don't have to just quit. There's plenty of things you can do. You can, first of all, you have way more power and influence than you think in any job, in any position. And if you learn that you don't, then it's time to move. But the first thing that I would recommend is treat your employer or your job as if it's a client, and you are a contractor, or not a contractor, but you know, you're a professional. Maybe you're a freelancer or a consultant, right? So
you're a partner.
You don't have to, right? And you don't have to identify with all the things that you don't like about the work. But I don't mean at all to say that you should stay in a place where things are really broken and they're bringing you down, because you shouldn't. But the first thing you can do is think about what's wrong. Analyze it, propose a solution to who you work with. And, you know, most of the time, first of all, you have to sell that solution to them, and you have to sell it in a way that makes sense to them, right? I mean, you have to align it with their goals. So it can't just be like, oh, you know, I'm unhappy, I don't like this. Or even if it is that, maybe there's a way you can spin it. But you come with a solution, and chances are your manager, or if it's not them, maybe it's somebody else, but chances are they will love that. Propose something, and you know, even it goes beyond your job description, like, great, just propose it, do it. If it has to do with your pay, I think very often you can get a raise by maybe not, I don't want to say just asking for it, but you have to sell the idea. But I think you can usually get it. You don't have to. A lot of people feel they have to just quit their job and move to another one to get a raise.
Mm-hmm.
You can, I mean, maybe you do if it doesn't work. But first of all, tell them why you should get a raise and what added value you'll provide. Maybe even ask what it is that you would. Somebody in my company asked me a really great question recently. They said, "What would I have to do to get X dollars as a salary?" And he gave a number, and I thought that was awesome, you know. And it really made me think about, you know, what. You know, there is always something that would have that value to an employer. So you gotta think about what it is.
Because employers don't want to just hire drones. You want to hire people that can think and develop and maybe delegate to others. You want mentors. You want people that are going to invest in the company, that believe in what they're doing and are passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah. Like, there's nobody that I've hired at OK Grow that I wouldn't expect that they can bring the company further forward. So nobody starts a company thinking that they're a genius and they just want a bunch of dumb robots to implement their grand plan. Yeah, absolutely.
Like you said, yeah. People to fill the gaps.
Those, totally. So, you know, I look at people and I think, like, if they were doing their own thing or working for someone else, would they be coming up with ideas that I would want to have at OK Grow? And that's the criteria. So I wouldn't hire anyone that didn't have that. And I'm sure that nobody else, I'm sure most people that are hiring, they think the same thing.
Yeah.
And if they don't, and you really learn that they don't, then move on. But don't assume they don't.
There's so many people that do think, like you were talking about, that they have to keep jumping from job to job to get that raise.
It works, because really it really works, and you get the reward from having done that, and you realize, and sometimes the opportunity will come along, and you're like, wow, I'm getting X, and I can get, like, you know, 20% more at this other job. Amazing. And then it's a clean slate, and you think, oh, you know, great, I'll just do that. And you have all the hopes of all the perfect things that will happen there. But, you know, like, it's not the only way. So
yeah, you could actually improve your own situation that you're currently in. It's not something about where you have to make that clean break. Like you said, you could come up with some kind of ideas. You could better your situation by investing a little bit more in the company or in whatever job you're doing.
Yeah, but, you know, don't assume that it'll have to be that way. But also, you know, nothing is perfect. No job is perfect. No client is perfect. And you know, if you've ever had the experience freelancing, and you know, this is really clear to me now at OK Grow, working with clients, whatever is not perfect about a client or their business or whatever, I don't take that upon myself as a problem, because they're just a client. I mean, you know, I look at all my clients as partners, so I don't mean just a client. I want to do my best to help them succeed and help their business succeed in any way that I can. But I don't take it upon myself to dislike everything about working with them if they're not perfect. And so it's the same with a job. And I think when you think of yourself as an employee and just part of the company, then it's a lot easier to take that identity on as yourself. But if there are things that are not perfect about your company, then if you look at them as a client, then it's a lot easier to propose solutions, fix things, and ignore the unfixable things. So I think that's a way to just kind of stay a little bit happier at work, and to look for what those small wins that you can actually, or big wins that you can actually get for, in your career. And then you fix something major or minor, whatever it is, and then you have something to show for the next, when the time comes that you do move on, mm-hmm. you don't just start a new job. I mean, the worst thing you can do is go into a job interview and they ask you why you're leaving, and you say, oh, because this job sucks. My boss is an idiot.
Exactly.
Right? No. Like, you don't ever want to say that. And what you want to do is you want to be like, well, I had a success. This is what I did, and I've left them better off.
They're going to want to expect some kind of value. They're looking to you to bring that same value or more to this new opportunity. Not to hear you cry or say, they didn't treat me right.
Yeah, there's nothing worse. And I've interviewed a lot of people, and you know, that's pretty much a way that you're guaranteed to not get hired. I mean, maybe at least by me anyway.
Yeah, exactly. My boss hated me. take that crying somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So where did you come up with the name OK Grow? Where was that come from? Where does that stem from?
I don't know. I was brainstorming things that, well, first of all, I was limiting it to anything that I could get the .com for. So it's not that easy. And,
sure.
And, you know, I know there's plenty of other top level domains, but I don't know. I just wanted a .com, especially at the time, 4 years ago.
Yeah, makes sense.
And, you know, I had most of my experience and interest was in the startup world, working with startups. One of the things that I thought would be the value that we bring to our clients was helping them develop, not just technically, but helping them bring practices to their business that the successful startups were doing. And I think even at the time, four or five years ago, when I was starting this, it was less common to do things like, you know, using analytics properly in your app, things like A/B testing and just tracking user events and using those to make decisions about how how you allocate your resources. Things like lean startup. So the lean startup movement is something that was really new back at that time. Now it's cliche, but still very, very true. But you know, the lean startup movement was a pretty revolutionary thing, I think, in business, not just in startups, but in even for bigger businesses. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking about those kind of things. The startup that I had worked for that got acquired, the founders there were really forward thinking, and they were doing all kinds of cool stuff with analytics. And it was at the time where the social media thing was kind of a buzz, and they were very focused on metrics that, like, for example, there's something called K factor, which is the number of acquisition, how your app grows through social sharing, basically. So if you add a user, so if you have a really viral app, mm-hmm. and this is this is not most apps, honestly, but you know, something like Twitter probably grew by people sharing it and becoming aware. Every user that you add would add, you know, either more than one new users or cause more than one new people to start using the product, or less than one. So if you're, and that's called the K factor. So if it was more than 1.0, then you are growing virally, basically, or you're going to grow exponentially. Anyway, they would measure things like that. And we had all these numbers, and you know, they would A/B test some things. And, you know, I thought that was pretty, maybe, you know, this was like 6-7 years ago now. It was a little less well known at the time that you could do that type of thing. And yeah, I wanted to make sure that any client that we build software for was equipped and had at least knew that those things existed, and we could, not that we were experts in those things, but I wanted to make sure that they weren't just flying blind, right? So the first app we built, I remember thinking, wow, these guys, they don't even really have the tools to know who's doing what with the app. And I just wanted to make sure that after that point, that every app that we build, our clients had the tools to really understand who was doing what and sort of explore that and make sure that they could focus on the niche, or, you know, or change the product in a way that resonated with the people that were actually using it.
Yeah, it's important to make business decisions on actual numbers. If you don't have those metrics, how do you know where to go?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. If you want to improve anything, you have to measure it. That goes for anything in your personal life or in business or anything.
So what do you say then OKGrow's main service or value add would be? What do you guys do different?
Well, that's evolved over the time. And I think the thing that has stayed constant is just helping clients build software in the best way possible. You know, so bringing, I think, business value as well is what we try to do. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always work that way. Not every client wants that, or is open to that, or has the budget for it, or, you know, sometimes they think they know best. But you know, the clients that I think that we've worked with the best are the ones that value our input in every way, right? So if somebody comes to us and they've got an exhaustive list of everything, all the technical, they know exactly how it's going to work. Well, frankly, we can't really add any value to that. And those aren't really the people that we end up usually working with. They'll go with someone cheaper.
Yeah.
If you know exactly what you want, exactly what it's going to look like, exactly how it's going to be built, and you're not hiring a professional to help you make those decisions, then yeah, go with the cheapest developer.
If your ego won't let you deviate to a solution to where maybe somebody has a better idea and you can't address that in a way, then you have to go a different path.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that they really, it's fine. They really don't need that added value, maybe. And they should be just hiring the exact coder, or, you know, the person that can write the most code the quickest for them, perhaps.
Yeah. Cause it's but build it
anyway,
this way.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just try to add value. I think that's what we do, is just try to add value in any way we can.
So why Meteor? Is Meteor the main platform that you stick with? Do you deviate from that?
Well, right now I look at ourselves as full stack JavaScript experts. Okay. And Meteor is the foundation of that. Uh-huh. And what Meteor is, so for anybody who's listening that doesn't, it's not familiar with Meteor is a full stack JavaScript framework. And It started 4 years ago when a lot of the things that I'm about to mention were pretty much unheard of, or, you know, it was really like the best in class. So it provided the front end framework. So your templates, and it had a system called Blaze that gave you reactive changes in your app very easily. And it extended that through a WebSocket based real-time connection to the server. And the server was looking for changes in the database. And it was all about, you know, the original value proposition was all about real time. You know, you don't have to refresh the page to see changes. So if you've ever used something like Trello or Google Docs and spreadsheets, and it would let you build apps like that very easily with a lot less work. But I think things have changed a lot. I've never, you know, explained Meteor to people as the benefit is that you can build real-time things, because I think it's more just that it's a very efficient way to build apps without having to do a lot of the things that you would have to do manually. Or, you know, if you assemble a JavaScript app by taking all different pieces from all over the place, and you have to make a decision at every part of the stack, then it'll take you longer. You'll do more work to integrate all the pieces. And, you know, back when we started using Meteor 2.5 years ago, it was because it was the most efficient way to build a really great app quickly. But I think what Meteor is now is a bit different. It has evolved a lot, mostly to keep up with changes in the JavaScript world. There's been a meme, or, you know, something that people have been talking about over the last year, which is JavaScript fatigue. And the JavaScript world has changed unbelievably in the last 2 years. Whatever was the hottest framework at almost any point over the last 2 years has changed within about 6 months. Every 6 months, there's been something totally different. Best practices, the way you build JavaScript apps has changed. So Meteor has actually done a really great job of keeping up with this. And what the community has been demanding of them is to become more just a part of the open JavaScript community. So they used to have their own package management system. They still do have their own build system. And a lot of these things that made Meteor amazing 4 years ago have also been done. And their own front end system, Blaze, now. There are other things that are maybe better, like, for example, React is the most exciting up-and-coming thing to me and a lot of people right now, which may be different in another short while. But Meteor has done a really good job of changing what they are to just sort of stay in line with that. Mm-hmm. So it's now I look at it as just a really great foundation for building JavaScript apps. So we use React now for the front end for most new projects that we're starting to.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and they're now evolving. So I think they've sort of slimmed down what they believe to be their value proposition to be a little bit more about the data transport layer. And so now they've got a new project, which is all about GraphQL. So they're now. They're building something called Apollo. So if you go to apollostack.com, they're building a GraphQL data layer. And I don't know how much technical stuff we should go into. I mean, I could explain what GraphQL is.
Talk as long as you want.
I think. Okay. All right. So GraphQL is basically it's something that Facebook has actually been, well, it came out of Facebook. They've been using it in production since 2012. So it is pretty mature, but it hasn't been part of the typical JavaScript developer's toolbox until very recently. I think it was only open source within the last year. Mm-hmm. And you could think of it as kind of a revolution, like a really great new way of getting data from the server side to the client side. That's the main use case. And a way that you could think about it is anywhere that you would use a REST API. And REST is basically REST API. I'm sure most people are familiar with it, but the 2 second definition of that. Well, there's all kinds of technical debates you could get into, but I'm going to ignore that. And it's basically, you know, accessing data via HTTP from the server. Usually with a custom, usually, you know, you'll build fairly custom endpoints. And so what GraphQL is a way to, rather than having specific custom REST API calls for every different type of thing that your client side might need to fetch, it's sort of a general way that you can provide data to the client in a way that is self-documenting and in a way that the client can avoid overfetching or underfetching, and it can basically have access to all the data that it needs, but in a way that that the client side developer can define what the server provides. So anyway, there's probably a lot more to talk about there, but that's just one of the things that I think Meteor is doing to stay relevant, is they're moving into that. So I would look at ourselves now as full stack JavaScript development shop, and I look at myself as basically a JavaScript developer. Mm-hmm. And that's our main, that's pretty much what we do. Before that, it was Rails for many years, but I think now, because most apps are using so much JavaScript, and even mobile apps, we build cross-platform mobile apps using JavaScript. There's exciting things like React Native that are pretty much native apps, but with large parts of them built using JavaScript.
Yeah, you know, I think I read on your site that you did some speaking at conferences about Rails. Is that right?
I back when I was doing Rails, I did give a few talks about Rails, and in the last few years, I've given many talks about Meteor and various JavaScript related things. Probably given 20 talks in the last 2 years, I would guess. Just not necessarily at conferences, but a lot of them at meetups and things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you consider doing any conferences, or is that just not something you're interested in doing anymore?
Yeah, I think it's just a lot of work, and I would like to. I've been really busy, and the amount of work that it takes to prepare like a conference quality talk, like the kind of talk that I would feel comfortable giving at, say, like JSConf or something, it takes a lot of time to put that together, and you have to sort of give that same talk a few times at local meetups and things. And most of the talks that I've been giving have just been not things that I put a lot of preparation into.
Mm-hmm.
So I,
it's more what
as,
you know.
As a company, we run a few meetups in Toronto. And so often I'll be like, oh, we don't have any speakers for this month. I work hard to try to get other people to give talks, but you know, sometimes nobody's available, or I've just done something that I'm excited about, or just learned about something I'm excited about, and so I just like sign up to do the talk myself, and which is a really good way to force yourself to learn something. So
Very true. I
highly recommend. You know, actually, I can't recommend enough giving talks, and don't wait until you're good at it. Just do it. Don't wait until you're perfect or you're an expert or whatever. Just if you sign up publicly to give a talk on something, you're gonna learn it. Maybe not as much as you would have liked to have, but it's gonna force you to learn stuff, and you'll just get better and better at it. So I think talking is a great thing to do.
Yeah, doing talks or writing articles. I saw that you blog a lot too.
Not as much as I should.
Still don't know where you find the time to do that as well. But if you put yourself out there in any kind of capacity, you're going to learn a lot more about what you're doing, and you're going to learn a lot more about yourself too, and what you enjoy doing and what you're capable of doing, and maybe where you want to go in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like having basically drawing a line in the sand, or like announcing publicly that you're going to do something, if it's signing up to give a public talk, it'll just force you to do it. So
I think a lot of people are just afraid to be vulnerable. I mean, I remember just the first time starting having a podcast, like it's hard to go back and then listen to your own voice and then think about the things that you said, but it's hard to let go of that kind of control and maybe show your face, if you will.
Oh yeah.
For some people.
And it's totally normal to stand up in front of a bunch of people, whether it's 10 people or more, stand up in front of them and like, until you get used to it, feeling that like totally irrational nervousness. Like all of a sudden you can, like, the first, I remember the first few times standing up in front of an audience and trying to teach or talk or give a talk and just being like, oh, I am nervous. Mm-hmm. So that's normal. And you just, after a while, you just do it.
Yeah, you just get over it.
Or after a while, it just becomes normal, yeah.
And it becomes something that you might even crave, something that you might want to do more and more.
Yeah, yeah.
So what other technologies are you interested in? I know you said, like, you're starting to look a little bit into React now. Do you do anything with the Internet of Things? Are you into any of that stuff, and like Raspberry and Particle?
No, because honestly, well, actually, that's I mean, I have a 6-year-old boy who's, I have two kids, a 6 and a 3-year-old, and my 6-year-old, he's getting to the age where we're going to be able to start building things together.
Ooh.
Like for Christmas this year, I bought something called Little Bits, which is a really cool sort of way to start building electronic things together. So that's awesome. But, you know, it's really more for him than for me. If I had all the time in the world, I would definitely be playing around with those things just for fun, because I think that's really exciting. But
yeah,
right now I pretty much focus on something that that has a goal for me, because honestly, I get excited about any kind of technology. So even and the world of JavaScript and building apps that I do professionally, there's so much. There's just, I can never do all of it. So there's enough in there to get excited about that.
Anybody find the time? I think that's, I was listening to a talk the other day where they were talking about imposter syndrome, and they were saying that one of the things that reasons people have that is because they feel like they don't know enough because of it.
Yeah.
And it's not because they don't know enough. They probably do know enough in what they're doing. It's just because there's so many different ways now to do so many different things.
Yeah.
Or the same thing, that it's hard to find the time. So I would ask you,
yeah,
to for our listeners, how would you, because I know you have two kids, right?
Two, yeah, a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Okay, so you have two kids, you're running a business, you're the owner of this company, you're also doing developing, you're writing, you do a little bit of speaking, you're doing martial arts. Where do you find the time, and what advice would you give people to manage time?
Yeah, I'm pretty busy. I explicitly gave up a lot of hobbies over the time and over my life. You know, for example, I used to do things like I used to DJ electronic music, and I would love to still do that. But I one day I just kind of said, you know what, I'm too busy. I want to focus on doing less things. And so I gave that up. I just focused. I don't watch a lot of TV or things like that. Like I mean, I do occasionally, but you know, it used to be that when I was younger, a weeknight I would watch a movie, like maybe a couple times a week or something. I don't do stuff like that anymore. So you definitely have to give up some things. You can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that's,
but all things in moderation.
That's pretty much it, just by focusing. Yep. Yeah, yeah. And I certainly would not say just work all the time. I mean, no, not at all. Do things that you're excited about. But if you have 10 hobbies that you are equally excited about, maybe just focus on a few of them. You know, or not. Like, I don't know that's necessarily advice, but I guess that's just what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I just found that I couldn't really do everything, so I just did a few less things. Having kids and having a family definitely takes a lot of time. So, you know, if you do have kids in a family, you also have to, I think you're forced to give up a few things. So that's maybe part of it. I've known a lot of people that were very unhappy as, not a lot, but I think I've known a few people that were, I think, a bit unhappy as parents because they did not want. And actually, that's one of the things. I thought I didn't want to be a parent because I used to do so many things, and I thought, where would I ever have the time?
Yeah.
And it just can't be worth it. So as a parent, you know, like, I think it's so cliche. So it's obvious that your kids are your greatest joy, and so you will just naturally give up a few things.
Maybe you enjoy running and you also enjoy going to the gym. Maybe you go to the gym a little less, or maybe you run a little less, because there's going to be other things in your life that you're going to enjoy. I'm a father of a 16-month-old, and man, I had no idea how amazing and how amazing my life is now. And it's just, I'm just so happy. It's unbelievable.
Yep, totally. Yeah, it's amazing. Teaching somebody how to do the most basic things. you teach your kid how to use a spoon, right? I mean,
yeah.
If that doesn't make you feel smart, everything you do, you feel smart. Look, kid, look how good I am with this spoon. I'm awesome at it.
That's amazing.
You can be too.
You could feed yourself with a spoon one day? Whoa!
Yep.
Yeah, I love that.
It's a great ego boost being a parent.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's just, you obviously know, and anybody else who's a parent knows how wonderful it is.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, Paul, I think we got about an hour in, and I know we could probably talk a little bit longer, but I know you also probably have some things going on. So I just want to say that it's been a considerable pleasure and a fascinating conversation. And I just want to thank you for sharing your time with us. And it's been great.
Thanks for having me on. It was great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you.
I've enjoyed all of your other shows that I've listened to so far. So I've become an active listener now.
Oh, awesome. Glad to hear it. We like hearing that. Thanks, Paul.
Awesome. Thanks, Frederick.